Hey everyone, welcome back to Too Young for This Trek. Today, it's just me and Locathor, who you probably heard on the last couple episodes. Welcome back, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I haven't been thrown awesome. Through time good or anything.
That's always good, right?
Yeah.
So, we are talking about Strange New Worlds, Season 2, Episode 3 today. What was the title on this one again?
Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow.
Huh.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's a title, I guess. Like, I don't know. I felt like an episode like this maybe needed something a little bit more profound. Maybe they were trying to be profound at that, but that felt kind of... I mean, they were in the past. It wasn't really about tomorrow.
But so it was about yesterday. Saving tomorrow.
That's true. That's true.
Yes.
Do you have an alternate title for this one by any chance?
Do I have an alternate title for this one? You know, I hadn't been... I know that alternate titles are a thing. I haven't thought of one for this episode. There are other episodes that I would come up with an alternate title for, but...
Yeah, I hadn't really thought of one either, but just in the moment, I was like, ooh, what would be a good alternate title? I don't know. I was thinking something like Toronto on the Edge of Forever. I don't know. Just like trying to play off that classic title, you know?
Yeah, Toronto on the Edge of Forever. I mean, if I was able to like a more jokey answer would be like A Doctor by Any Other Name. Because Ooh. We'll get into it, but like many people yeah. that I watch Trek with said that this is a Doctor Who episode. Someone wanted to put their Doctor Who script into Star Trek and that they just did it.
You know, it does. Yeah, I could see that. Definitely some Whovian vibes from this one,
yeah.
which, you know, I don't mind. I kind of like when Trek does the time travel thing.
Okay.
I know that's sort of an unpopular opinion among certain fans. But I dig this kind of stuff. I thought it was fun.
Yeah. I think this is a little different, than like, we'll talk in a sec. Do we want to start?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Let's try to go in order. You can keep me on track. How about that?
Okay. Well, we start with, Laan's voiceover as to all the stuff she's been doing. Her
right.
security log and so forth, which has a bit of a joke about the Pelia and her immortality, like causing her to have stolen a bunch of relics over the years and stuff.
Right.
It seems that like just a joke.
Yeah. It seems like a throwaway line, right?
Yeah. And then, because it's so Spock is like gets a noise complaint from his lute because he's like thrashing too hard on his lute or something, which is you can't yeah. imagine Spock doing that. Maybe he did, but it would be, you know, silly to mm-hmm. imply that he did. And then the next thing, right. well, that's a joke, too, because we're doing that. We're setting up for jokes, even though, you know, it turns out to be relevant later. So I think it's a good misdirect of sorts.
Totally. No, I totally agree. I was surprised they circled back to it, but it was kind of brilliant. The other thing, so her character's really interesting and we'll talk about her a bit more later, mm-hmm. but we've seen her a couple times at this point and I don't know. I really like her. I did think it was a little weird though, that she's yet another species that happens to look human, that happens to be immortal, that happens to be on Earth at this time, you know, when we have, you know, Guinan and, but it's not the same species, right? Unless I miss something.
No. She's a Lanthanite. And
not an Illyrian.
Guinan's race is the Illyrians.
Illyrians, that's what it is. Yeah.
I think, yeah. Illyrian with an A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I think that it's easy enough to suppose that a form of the anthropic principle applies here, which is like
sure.
If they didn't look like humans, they wouldn't be hiding on Earth. If they looked like Klingons, they'd be hiding on Kronos, and then there'd be an
right.
immortal race on Kronos. And so it's like, well, they happen to look like humans, so Earth is where they hide out.
That's a fair point. And, you know, that actually brings up an interesting question. Are there other species that just happen to look like other species? I guess there kind of is, right? We have Vulcans and Romulans, but they do have a common ancestry. Like, is there a species that just happens to look like Klingons? I don't know. It just brings up a lot of questions for me.
Yeah, I think because humans are the default is the implied assumption of Star Trek, even though, like, they're not even the default. Like, the humans... this is something that I mentioned in the last episode. The humans of Star Trek are not the humans of modern Earth. They feel alien to us because they don't act like we do.
yeah. They've evolved, as Picard likes to say. They've evolved,
yeah. So, and I mean, we know that there is an explanation in Star Trek for why this is happening, which we don't have to go into, but there is a hand wavy explanation for why this is happening. So it's sort of like,
That's true. I didn't mean to go down that rabbit hole. My bad.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Rabbit holes are what we should do.
There was one particular thing that jumped out at me pretty early on in the episode though, because I was about to watch it and I had to pause it real quick. But like I don't know if it was the opening shot, but we get to see the Enterprise and I happened to pause it on there and it looks like a work of art. I think I posted about this on Twitter, but like the effects in this show, it's easy to kind of like forget, like they're really good. Like all the visual effects in this show have been top notch, at least in my opinion. The ships look great. We don't get much of that in this episode, but the shots we do have like are freaking great looking.
The opening looks especially great. I have, like, one of the regular complaints I've heard from my Trek friends is that in New Trek, there's too much lens flare. They want there to be less lens flare. And I
there's less
than
J.J. Abrams, at least.
Well, right. It's not J.J. levels bad. But, like, a lot of people are like, oh, how, Lokothar, how are you barely watching this? And I'm like, I see your point. I'm not as upset by the lens flare, but I understand your point that you might want a lot less lens flare than there is.
Yeah, it's a choice. They seem to be sticking to it.
Yeah, they're really dedicated to it. After the security officer's log, we see her fighting with Mbenga. Which,
that's right.
I mean, who knew that he was any sort of martial arts trained? It's like,
right.
We saw him punch his way through a horde of Klingons, and then that came out of nowhere. But now I guess we're sort of reconfirming. Yeah, he's known how to do it the whole time. You know, there's more to these people. But I like this. That it's more to these people.
It's kind of clever.
Than
yeah.
You're immediately shown that sometimes like stuff doesn't come together. Like, you know, if Bashir was secretly martial arts master, you'd be like, why? He's like just a nerd. Why would he do this?
Right.
But yeah, Mbenga, he's not a nerd doctor.
I do like that a lot because it's such a good point because like the Spock thing, like with his loot, that's like sort of a deep cuts reference to TOS, but the fact that it's like his hobby, you know, and we don't really see it often.
Yeah.
But they're kind of showing that in this show. I think that's a good sign that we're really going to get to know these characters a lot more. And not just the surface level stuff. So that's really interesting. And it is really cool how this show has been focusing in on a specific character each episode a lot of times. Like last episode was all about Una.
Yes.
This episode is about, I keep forgetting her name.
La'an.
La'an. That's right.
L-A-apostrophe-A-N.
Yes. Khan's great, 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 great granddaughter or something like that.
Yeah. However many greats.
Yeah. and the amount of greats may have changed because of the temporal Cold War, according to this episode, but that's a whole nother topic.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll get there.
yeah, we will.
So La'an isn't feeling well, but she refuses to say what's bothering her. And before she can, presumably she might tell us in her security officer's log in the voiceover, but it's time for the plot to happen, and so a time agent appears on the ship. He has been shot with like a slug thrower, and it's very sudden, and then he dies. But he hands the time. Right. He hands well, and so this is where it gets Doctor Who-ish. She gets like a vortex. What would in Doctor Who be called a vortex manipulator? She has a little time wand. And it prevents, like, it shields her from time shift results. We've seen this stuff before in, like, Voyager and Deep Space Nine and stuff. Occasionally.
Oh, totally.
You have a time shield, and it prevents time waves from affecting you. And so
I'm willing to roll with it.
I mean, it must exist somewhere. And then she is told to go to the bridge. So she goes to the bridge. The bridge she's thinking about is the bridge of the Enterprise, but now Kirk's in charge. And it's not even a Federation starship. It's not a Starfleet starship. It's
right.
The United Earth, or like the Earth space something. United Earth
Fleet. Defense Force or something. Yeah, that's what it is. United Earth Fleet.
United Earth Fleet. It's the United Earth Fleet Enterprise. And Pike is like, Kirk is like, who are you? Pike is gone and Kirk doesn't know who this is.
Mm-hmm.
I liked, what the hell are you doing on my ship? I don't know if anyone specifically said that before in Star Trek, but it feels like someone
feels
must have
like
said
a callback.
That. It feels like a callback to something somewhere, but I couldn't place it. I'm not sure. I don't know. Captains get real picky when people show up on their ships mysteriously. Like, calm down, all
right? Right.
Everyone's getting so upset.
I mean, this is a common thing that happens in Star Trek. You'd think they'd be used to it by now.
Exactly. If someone showed up mysteriously on your bridge 20 times, the 21st time, you should just be like, okay, fine, fill out this form.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess you could argue that this Kirk probably hasn't been through a lot of that stuff at this point. Because we learn, timeline has changed quite a bit. You know, the first contact with the Vulcans never happened. We don't know why yet, but
it's really
interesting.
So maybe it did. It's so the Vulcans
they
and
went
humans
poorly?
Haven't formed a federation. Like they know of each other. Maybe they met each other and then like the Vulcans sort of revealed themselves and then just left or something and like didn't become close allies of the humans. Somehow they're not associated with each other.
Definitely.
I'm sure that someone is already writing fan fiction set in this alternate timeline. It's ripe for just making up more and more stuff.
Oh, you know it's happening.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would necessarily want to revisit that universe, but it was an interesting concept for sure. It's kind of like a, I don't know. It at this point, there's so many off branches of the prime timeline. It did remind me of like season two of Picard, which kind of did something similar. It works for this story. It works for this story. That didn't bother me too much. But I was wondering, what did you think of Kirk prior to this? Like how the show has handled him? Because we saw him once before. At the end of season one.
Yeah.
I know people had a lot of opinions. Troy, I know, didn't like him. He thought he looked too much like Jim Carrey or something. I thought he did a pretty great job considering.
Physically, I can agree. Yeah. Physically, he has a Jim Carrey-esque look to him. And the jaw and the cheeks and so forth.
Sure.
But I don't think that looking like Jim Carrey, you know, disqualifies him from being Kirk. Particularly.
Yeah.
I like that the characters look like every time they recast a character, if they look a little bit the same, sure, I'll take it as a bonus. But I feel the way that the role is portrayed is a little more important than necessarily the exact look of the actor.
Oh, definitely.
So in terms of the way that he was playing Kirk, I really liked it. Is actually the second time we've seen Kirk in Strange New Worlds, but both times these have been not the real Kirk, notably.
Yeah,
this is
a very interesting
fake Kirk. So we can almost say that like any severe differences are like because of timeline, because he's like on a 10-year alternate timeline or like a no Federation
exactly.
timeline or whatever. And there's a Kirkishness to him. He's a little bit brash. He's a little bit prone to doing a bluff.
Yes.
And these are Kirk elements that we're very familiar with, having seen Kirk
totally.
So many times. One of my favorite original series episodes, it's the Corbomite maneuver. The whole episode rests on Kirk just doing a bluff and seeing how long he can go without the bluff being called. And I'm like, yep, this is exactly what Kirk should be like. He gets in over his head and does a bluff. And
yeah, definitely.
And as we see later in this episode, he gets in over his head and does a bluff. And I'm like, perfect, perfect, Kirk.
They nailed it. Yeah. I do think, yeah, the writing is really solid on him, but I think he really delivers it. You know, to me, the way he's acting feels like a perfect combination of Chris Pine and William Shatner, which I think is kind of like the ideal Kirk, right? Because sometimes Shatner over-Shatners it, you know? And then Chris Pine was sometimes a little bit too far removed from what the character was intended to be, at least. But then again, different timelines, whatever.
I think it's also harder to say because the expectation of how you are quote unquote supposed to act has shifted a lot over the decades.
It's true.
Like a lot of old movies, and you see people and they got these weird accents. See, and then like if you see behind the scenes footage, they're talking exactly like we would talk. But like the expectation is that in a movie, you'd put on this funny accent and you'd have this sort of played up portrayal. And not that everyone in the original series was like that, but everyone was a little bit jumpy and on edge all the time. And just sort of the more modern style is to have people just a little bit calmer than that. A little like maybe they're angry or shouting or whatever, but a lot of the time people are just having a conversation and they're not getting worked up over nothing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point, actually, because, yeah, TOS, very much the 60s. You know, it was back when, like, you know, movies and TV and stuff were still kind of an extension of plays where you kind of have to dramatize. Yeah. Just because, like, the origin of that is that, like, the audience sometimes couldn't really see all that well, depending on how far the stage was. So they would do these big gestures to really get the point across.
Yeah.
And that kind of translated to movies and TV. And there's actually a whole story behind that, the accent you pointed out. I can't remember what it's called, but it was a specific thing and it was a choice.
Yeah.
That they did for, like, you know, radio and TV at the time. And then it eventually kind of dropped off. But so TOS during that time, yeah, the acting was a lot more over the top and stuff. So, you know, I'm glad that they're not going that route with it, because that would not work.
It definitely wouldn't work.
But and they're also, you know, he's not, I don't know, we haven't seen enough of him, but they're not portraying him as like a total chauvinist, which is good.
Yes.
So, you know, they're kind of approaching it from with modern sensibilities, which is good, right. But they still retain who the character is, which is clever and awesome, I thought. And, you know, I've always liked Kirk as a character, so it was exciting to see this portrayal. And I think that they totally nailed it. I really do. And it's, again, it's also clever that we seem to only be getting him once a season and it's not the real Kirk. I think that's so clever. And I hope they continue to do that, because I was so worried when I saw him in the trailer for this season that he was going to be an ensign on the Enterprise. Not only does that break canon, but then the show just becomes about Kirk at that point, right?
I don't know that really it necessarily becomes that. Kirk about at that point, but it certainly would be, it would feel out of place. I agree. Yeah. It would feel out of place.
Totally.
Cause I mean,
especially since we have so many new characters to focus on, you know, it's
and
like,
we already have in terms of like people that are going to be on the Enterprise the next 10 years or whatever. We already have Spock and we already have Uhura, and we haven't had too much time with either of them. So if you're going to show more stuff about characters that are going to like make this their life for the next 10 years, pick one of the two people you already have and just stick with it.
Totally agreed.
So this brings us to Kirk and La'an arguing over how she got there, what's up with her time device, etc. And then they rather childishly like wrestle over the time device, and the button gets pushed, and then they get warped to the past, and they end up in New York City. I mean Toronto.
Yeah, that was a clever twist.
Yeah,
it was a clever like kind of fake out, I guess.
I like that. And I mean, maybe if you're in Toronto, you immediately recognize it.
Yeah.
But I think it's good and maybe bad that Kirk doesn't recognize anything on Earth. Because as he quickly explains in his universe, in his time, Earth is a smoking ruin with no cities on it.
Yeah, that was the reveal. Sorry, forgot what I was saying. Oh, it was nice to see something other than San Francisco for once.
Oh, yes. We don't need to go refreshing. To San Francisco yet again.
We've seen San Francisco in every freaking time period at this point. Like, it's okay. Like, we can see what's happening in the rest of the world.
Yeah. And I think it's rather nice the way that Kirk casually mentions that Earth is all destroyed.
Yes.
Because to him, there's barely even any emotion to it. Like, it's so far removed from his time period. It's like, you know, if I tell you that the beaches of Normandy are just a charred hulk or whatever, it's like, I don't care. That happened 60 years ago. Who cares?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. That was clever.
But it, like, La'an knows how it's supposed to be, and this subtly sets up, well, not subtly, but casually sets up the stakes of the episode.
Definitely.
Save the future. Save the tomorrow and the tomorrow and the tomorrow. Otherwise, you're just going to get Ash World.
Yeah. The stakes are really high for a time travel story. And again, I guess that is the case a lot of times.
I don't know that they're necessary. I mean, most of the time that there's a time travel episode, the stakes are pretty high. Like when Voyager did their big time travel episode, it was like blowing up the entire solar system.
That's true. And then, of course, Discovery, it was like, you know, an universe ending threat.
Oh, Discovery. And then,
yeah, it's always something like that. And then in City on the Edge of Forever, which, of course, we haven't covered on the podcast yet. So hopefully Tyler isn't listening.
Yeah, don't listen to these episodes, Tyler.
Yeah, I'll warn him. But yeah, and City on the Edge of Forever, which is one of my personal favorites. Of course, it's kind of a similar situation. I guess we can get into that later towards the end, but kind of similar stakes, sort of.
Yeah. And so they need to find money. And then we find out that Kirk is a chess expert. because he can beat people at old dumb 2D chess. What a boring game, 2D chess.
I thought that was kind of clever, kind of funny, because we, you know, it's established that he plays 3D chess, and
yeah,
he's
3D
the kind
chess
of
in the future.
Yeah, and he's definitely the kind of person that doesn't like to lose. Like, that's like a real core tenet of who he is. So of course he's probably got a lot of the moves memorized and whatnot. I just thought that scene was kind of funny because, like, it kind of goes viral and all that.
Yeah.
but there is this line when they mentioned the currency issue. I can't remember the exact line, but I thought it was kind of clever because it was a little bit more nuanced than, like, what Star Trek IV did, where it's like, what's money, you know? It wasn't like they were playing dumb. It was more, it's like currency is used for everything. In this time period, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Then we should get
some. I thought that was kind of a clever way. Yeah.
Yeah, I like how quickly this Kirk adapts to the situation without being all dumbstruck.
Yeah.
So we get some money. We get some clothes. And
yeah, that was interesting.
There's an amazing, amazing joke where La'an and Kirk both come out of the dressing room and they have the same outfit. One of them has to change. So Kirk goes back in, gets a different jacket. It's all very nice.
Their outfits kind of reminded me of what Kirk Uhura and I think Spock wear in Into Darkness. I don't know if it was like an intentional callback at that, but I thought it was kind of interesting. It looked kind of similar.
I think I only saw it the once ever, so I don't really remember.
Yeah, no worries.
And so then they end up at the hotel where Kirk more carefully explains what his timeline is about and how Earth got turned into an ash world, but humans are struggling to survive on the moon and Mars and Venus and stuff. And I think this, so this is something that my brother and I kind of talked about in the last episode, but basically he's talking about how great his timeline is, that they've got all these accomplishments. And then La'an turns around and immediately says, yeah, but in my timeline, it's so much more than that. Like, however much you have, things could always be even better than that.
Right.
And he can't even see it because he's sort of like stuck in his, what we would call like his ruined timeline. And right. him stuff
his
is
world
great.
View.
Yeah. His worldview is yeah. like, oh, this is fine.
Yeah.
But, and like, as the audience, we only really think that it's so bad because we're usually looking at the better version.
That's a good point.
If we had regularly been watching the ruined timeline and then someone shows up and says, we're going to take all that away and it's just going to be so much better and you just have to trust us, then yeah, we'd probably be with Kirk that like, what are you talking about? This sounds dodgy.
Yeah, it might be a little skeptical for sure.
Yeah.
I also thought it was kind of an interesting choice to put these two characters together, like of all possible combinations.
Say more.
Like, because La'an is very headstrong, and Kirk is too, so they kind of butt heads a little bit, and it's like, I feel like they really, they end up getting along quite a bit, but they're kind of, yeah, they have a lot of similarities, you know? I just thought that was kind of interesting.
They've got,
but also,
they've got close character types. They're both incredibly assertive, yeah.
Definitely. But also, it is interesting because she is related to his nemesis in a weird way.
That too.
So I made a joke about like my new headcanon being that the reason Khan was so pissed at Kirk was because he slept with his great, 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 great granddaughter.
You know, I did read that you made that joke, but I would still point out again that that's not the kind of person Khan is. Khan wants people to pick a path and then fight their path and fight their war. Khan is, in That's some true. Ways, almost a good person. If it weren't for all the genocides.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, other than that, just a little, little thing. And then a bridge explodes. Suddenly, we look out
a
the
literal
window.
Bridge. Like, not like a ship
not
bridge.
Not the bridge
like
of a ship. Like a bridge yes. over water, over yes. Lake Ontario, explodes. Outside the window of the hotel. And so La'an realizes, get to the bridge. Didn't mean the bridge of the Enterprise. It meant
yes.
the Lake Ontario bridge in Toronto.
Yes.
Is this a real bridge? I don't know enough about Toronto.
I don't either. I really want to go there at some point.
Okay.
But yeah, no idea.
I'm going to assume it's a fake bridge.
Probably.
I mean, if it's supposedly
never really
just opening in the 2020s or whatever, you know.
It never really specified a specific year, and that was probably on purpose. I think it was intended to be maybe a couple years ahead of where we are right now, but I don't know.
Well, so supposedly the original eugenics war was 1996 and then got delayed by 30 years, but that's also probably an approximation because it was given to us by a person going on an angry rant. But
yeah,
if you take 1996 and add 30 years, you get 2026, which is like, you know, standard 5 minutes into the future science fiction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But like Khan, as we find out at the end, is still a kid. So the eugenic wars may not start for a little bit longer, but I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know how any of this works.
Maybe they started before Khan was an adult. Maybe he's got fast aging or something, so he looks like a kid, but in 6 months he's going to be an adult. I don't know.
That's actually a really good point. That, yeah, it could work. I would explain why he doesn't deal with things very well.
Yeah. There's the thing about Star Trek is most of the time you can spend an extra 2 sentences and explain anything about anything at any time.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a really loosey-goosey type of thing.
Yeah, we just got to roll with it, especially at this point, you know, and I'm fine with it. Like, as long as the actual stories continue to be good, you know, I'm not like 100% what do you call it, connected to the old canon. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like if they come up with a clever way to explain things, that's fine. You know, like, because a lot of the old stuff didn't really add up either. You know, like, it's all over the place. And, you know, there was all kinds of retcons here and there. It's always been that way. So, you know, it's all good.
Yeah.
Just fun to, it's fun to pick apart and think about, though.
Right. So I guess we go to the bomb site, and the blast marks look like they're from a photonic bomb, which sounds strange. I'm not a bomb expert. I wouldn't normally say that I could, like, look at scar marks and say that they came from a particular type of bomb or whatever, but maybe if I were from the future and I was a security expert, then I would know.
And of course, were some strange markings on it. Yeah. So I guess that's indicative of photonic stuff. I don't know.
I mean, maybe it's like steel is supposed to be one color and it's got some sort of shine on the edges of the marks, which makes it like is a standard byproduct of photonic blasts on steel or something. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That works. That's some good techno babble. Yeah, it works for me.
And photonic bombs, as we know, are not 2026 technology, and so they suspect someone from the future has done this. And steal a car to chase. Oh wait, I'm sorry. They talk to a person taking pictures, who we might think is a reporter, and. That's how we see the photonic bomb blast marks and such. So then they steal a car. There's kind of a strange half car chase. It's like it's the most calm car chase that I've seen in a very long time. During the chase, it's mentioned that Kirk has never heard of Noonien Song. And
yeah.
Then Kirk gets arrested at the end of the chase. But who's there to con the police officers that are trying to arrest him? But the lady with the camera.
That's right.
This part didn't make as much sense because, like, how did she get there ahead of them?
Yeah. I feel like maybe that was supposed to be like a hint that something else was going on with her.
We could take it as a hint. I mean, she may have a transporter or something. Like, she's in the future. Maybe she's got a ship. She did a site-to-site beam or something. But at the time,
we just don't know that yet at this point.
Yeah, we don't know that yet. So it kind of doesn't make sense yet. So she talks to them about aliens. And she's one of those people that believes that aliens are visiting Earth. And as we all know, aliens are definitely not real. Therefore, she is a crazy person. but Kirk and La'an play along and say that La'an has been on the ship and she saw the photonic bomb. Have you heard about photonic bombs? And they get a bunch of information about looking for a cold fusion reactor, which is detectable in some way or another. But none of them are engineers, so they don't really remember. They don't really know exactly how you detect for cold fusion, except that you can.
Yeah. So which makes sense, you know, like with their technology, it would just be a couple buttons. But like, unless you're an expert, you might not know how that works, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, if
you just because I can drive a car doesn't mean I know how to put together a combustion engine, right. You know, like,
yeah. And if you're a person in charge of security, and usually you ask for the technician to check for the EPS panels to be working, then you're just like, well, I know they work or don't, but I don't know how it happens.
Yep.
So this brings us to needing an engineer and also being stuck in 2026 and also being in Toronto. And then La'an sees Vermont, and that loops it back around to going to what's it called the library or something, the archaeology department.
Which is
the name of the antique shop that what's her name owned, Pelia. Pelia owns the archaeology department, which is an antique shop of stuff that probably was stolen, but you know.
And she's such an interesting character.
She's a lovely character. I love how she's played.
Yeah.
But she also doesn't have any engineering skills at this point in the timeline.
Yeah. I that was also pretty clever.
Yeah, it's supposed to be that I guess after this conversation, she decides to begin learning engineering and eventually becomes a Starfleet engineer.
Yeah.
But she doesn't know anything about engineering yet. And so they take a watch. It's like some sort of glow in the dark watch that when they take it near the cold fusion reactor, it's going to glow in the dark again or something.
I think it has tritium in it, which I think reacts with something. Is that what it was? Tritium?
Yeah. Something like tritium that. Is in divers watches from the 1980s. It says here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's like, I want to say like, loosely radioactive, like low levels of radiation.
Yeah,
could be wrong.
So the cold fusion reactor is going to give off a radiation that's going to interact with the watch if they can take the watch near the reactor. So they grab the watch and they start going around town, and it's nighttime so that they will be able to see their glow in the dark watch, which is all very convenient.
Oh yeah.
And so then we have an almost romantic midnight stroll for La'an and Kirk.
Yeah.
Where Kirk delightfully plays dumb about knowing about a bunch of literary references that La'an makes until he sort of breaks from scene, so to speak, and it's like, okay, I give. I know what all these things are about. And then we get a smooch. You know,
they do. I thought that whole part was cute. They've got a lot of good chemistry together.
It's
something
delightful.
You wouldn't really expect, but it also makes perfect sense, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think this again goes to the different time periods that we have seen Kirk, like the different real life, the ways that you show romance on screen has changed over time. And with a lot of older Kirk stuff, it kind of doesn't age well. It seems sort of strange and almost creepy a lot of the time. And I was delighted.
It's like with old Bond movies.
Yeah. They're not great. And they probably weren't ever great, but like your parents tell you, oh, this is how it's supposed to be. And I'm like, have you thought about what you're looking at? And they're like, no, this is all normal. And I'm like, I don't know.
So it was
nice to see Kirk in a more like modern style romantic scene. And he is conforming to the modern rules of how a romance works on camera. Which still is kind of fake. It's kind of not really how people actually do things in real life. You know, theater,
etc. It's still heightened.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's more comfortable to watch.
I thought it was great.
Yeah. It was refreshing. It was very good.
Definitely.
And they smooch. And then they look down. And the watch is aglow with radiation light. With cold light, mm-hmm. cold fusion, whatever we want to call it.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that works, but yeah.
And we get to the Noonien Sung Institute for Cultural Advancement, which is I don't know. We've never seen this before, as far as I know, right? This is all made up for this episode.
No, yeah, this is totally new stuff. We're in new territory
here. Okay. So they see one person.
Well, I was just going to say, and I kind of like it. I dig it. You know, like I know a lot of people were complaining about the throwaway Khan reference in, what was it, Picard season 2, but that got me excited. I was like, oh, they might actually revisit this at some point. We might actually get to maybe see a little bit more backstory on all of this at some point. So
right.
I wasn't expecting it here, but that was kind of cool, you know?
Yeah. I think it's, there's kind of a fine line between like filling in details that have been referenced before and like just kind of being too self-servicing with trying to like flesh out every single thing that's happened in the timeline.
But true. It is a little fan servicey.
Yeah. This isn't like
times.
If you'd never seen Star Trek before, if you didn't know what was going on, they go to some sort of science place and there's a kid who they're going to have to kill because he does bad stuff in the future. And that still makes sense from a story perspective, even if you aren't familiar with this exact detailed stuff.
Yeah, I do think it adds a lot more weight, though, being that it is a character we definitely know about as fans.
Yeah. And I liked it because, well, so she, La'an, or actually both La'an and Kirk, they see somebody open a palm print reader and then go through a door. And yes. So La'an isn't sure, but she just tries putting her hand on it. And however it works, she is able to open the door.
I guess because of DNA.
She has to have some sort of augment marker, but if it's an augment marker that opens the door, then that means the person in front of them has the augment or enough of an augment marker in him. So like if the children are the augment experiments, then why does the adult, I don't know.
Yeah, it does bring up more questions the more you think about it.
A door can open for more than one reason. Like there could be a lot of ID codes or something. It's like if they have any of these qualities open up or something, it's just, it was sort of strange.
Yeah, definitely.
But then the sealed door opens up and we hear a gun and it's the conspiracy lady and she is a Romulan. Dun, dun, dun!
Which was totally set up early in the episode and I didn't realize it, but we get a glimpse of like a photo of a Romulan bird of prey.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of great because it looked like one of those grainy UFO photos, you know?
right. And it did, when I saw that photo, now that you mention it, when I saw that photo, I thought to myself, like, why would there be a bird of prey photo? Like if she had some sort of alien photo, wouldn't it be one of the groups that is closer, like maybe it would be a Vulcan ship or something, because we've seen before that Vulcans have gone to Earth or something, like a planet closer to Earth. Once it comes into place that she is the Romulan agent, then it makes sense that also she would have like their bird of prey. They took a photo of their own bird of prey so that they would use it as part of some sort of like con game that she would run against humans?
Yeah.
Question marks?
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of, it seems like there's a lot we're not getting here in this storyline. And, you know, I'm willing to roll with it, but I feel like there could be more here that we're just not getting.
So another thing is that if she's from the future and is using some sort of time travel, then in the Strange New Worlds era of Trek, most people don't have access to time travel, but like by the TNG era, people do have access to time travel. And so that's fine that time travel exists, but then when they look at a ship, it looks like the older style ship and not the Dedendrix class type ship that you'd see from TNG. So again, that's question marks.
Yeah, that's a good point. It could be like maybe an off branch of Tal Shiar that like stole some old tech. I don't know. Like there could be, again, like anything you can explain if you just.
right.
They didn't explain it, but like, I'm sure there could be an explanation if we needed one.
And I don't think it needs a strong explanation necessarily. I think maybe if you just delete the Romulan warbird picture entirely, like, just make it some other random ship we've never seen before. And that might have felt a little bit better looking back on it. It's like, oh, there was some alien ship, you know?
Sure.
And this is where Kirk does his bluff. He says, if you fire the gun, it will set off the alarms. And then your plan will be ruined. Unfortunately for Kirk, she fires the gun.
Yeah, she calls it.
She calls the bluff. And shoots him, and it's in a really strange way. Like we see him, and he sort of shakes, and we don't see like a bullet going into him. Like his torso where he gets hit is below the frame as he's getting hit.
Yeah.
It definitely had like a strangeness to the way the whole thing is composed.
Okay.
And you know, it's fine. He falls to the ground.
I mean, he's not fine.
Well, he's not fine. the composition of the scene is fine.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. He's all smug. He's looking at Lan. He says, "Try me." And then she pulls, like, the camera points at her gun, and she pulls the trigger, and the camera kind of shakes because of like how powerful the shot is or whatever. And then it shows him on his face, and then he's getting hit like below the frame. And then also like the camera cuts to a wide shot, and they're like not even 3 feet apart. Like if she held her arm all the way out, the gun would be like brushing his nose. They're like super, super close. It's very strange.
That's a good point.
But yeah, it was
fine. I thought that moment was pretty good just from a character standpoint.
Yeah, dramatically it really works.
Yeah, because I didn't expect that. And then of course Lan, who she has a hard time getting close to people. We know this. It makes a lot of sense given her background. And she also has, you know, this thing that she's been dealing with almost like a prejudice because of her lineage, you know, because of the whole augment thing. So it was like, I think for her, this was like one of the first people she's been able to connect with without that baggage, without that coming up. And so
probably the only person
maybe that's
ever.
Why she was. Yeah. And maybe that's why she was really able to kind of lower her shields and get close to him. And then it's like so tragic to have that in the way it does, you know?
Yeah. Like, so even with Una, who isn't holding augmentations against La'an, Una is still thinking about her being a descendant of augments the whole time.
Right. Yeah. And
so even when like Kirk is probably the only person she's ever met that doesn't think about it at all.
Right. That's true.
So,
yeah, I thought that was extremely clever. Then I'll let you get to the next scene because I have thoughts on that too.
all right, well, so Kirk falls to the ground. He's dying. La'an is like, "No, you can't die." And he's like, "Finish the mission." And the Romulan runs in, shoots a bunch of guards. She is so good at shooting guards. Every single shot she does puts a guard on the floor. She is the most freak. Like, Jack Bauer is not this good with guns. It is ridiculous how good she is with this gun. And so she fights her way to a door marked Khan in like a child's handwriting. And La'an catches up, and they're both there. And she's like, "I know what's behind that door." And the Romulan's like, "Yeah, of course you know what's behind that door. This is what we need to change." Is this the part you wanted to comment on?
Well, yeah, kind of. It's really interesting because it reminds me of that whole thing where like, if you could go back and kill Hitler, would you? What would the consequences be? You know, that kind of thing. And it's interesting that the Romulans want to take him out of the timeline because of the ramifications not having him in history, you know?
Right.
It's that whole butterfly effect thing. Like, you don't know what will happen, you know? Like, it's like Jenga. You move one block, the whole thing crumbles apart, you know?
Yeah. Well, so she says that they have wherever she comes from has some sort of predictive computer that, like, simulated if we kill Khan, what happens? And it doesn't necessarily have to directly give an explanation of why things like 100 years later or 200 years or whatever, things are going to look different. It can just sort of show a difference, which that's good because that's actually like the more that we use large language models and like artificial intelligence type systems, the more even general people are being aware of the fact that with these hyper complicated systems, you actually don't know particularly why the results are coming out the way they are necessarily.
Yes.
It's often incredibly hard to know why did it do that? And
yeah,
so,
that's a good point.
You know, you advance that 200 years in the future and it becomes even less obvious why the computers are necessarily doing anything they're doing.
Right.
And then also we have seen specifically before there is that, the guardian, like the doorway guardian of time thing, like the big portal.
Yeah, the guardian of forever.
The guardian of forever. That's the term. And it's a computer that can talk about time. Like we've seen, apparently for whatever reason, computers can talk about time. That's a Star Trek thing. And so she's like, oh, we have a computer that talks about time. And I'm like, a computer that talks about time. I'm on the same page. We're talking the same language.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, who knows? Quantum computing is, you know, it's going to be advanced, you know, at this point, I imagine.
Yeah.
I'm assuming like that kind of technology doesn't just stay stagnant, you know, especially considering how our current technology seems to be accelerating at a, like, what do you call it? Exponential rate. So it could keep going, you know?
Yeah. And then we get a lovely rant from this time agent about how stuff was supposed to happen in 96, but so many people have tried to kill Khan and save Khan over and over that it's become one of those like nexuses of time that's gotten all screwed up. And that's why things are happening 30 years later. And I love it. I love this. I love this rant. This was amazing.
Yeah, it's some good retconning.
Well, yeah, because so when we originally talked about Khan, it was that in 1996, there was eugenics wars and he like controlled billions of people on the planet and then they sent him off into space. And then later there is a Voyager episode where they go to 1996 and everything is totally normal. And people are like, hey, what's up with that? Why is the Voyager crew not talking about the eugenics wars? And it's because, you know, it wasn't important to the episode. And so everyone just kind of forgot. And who cares?
True. That's such a good point. I almost forgot about that.
Yeah. So
even though this episode reminded me of that episode at times.
Yeah. So now we're like, well, it all weaves back together because of this explanation. And I like that. I like that they're taking like three different points and sort of just carefully connecting them. And they're kind of connecting them after the fact. But they're still doing it pretty well.
Well, and we know the temporal Cold War is a thing, and that seems to be, this seems to be sort of related to that.
This could totally be a temporal Cold War operation, and we would never know.
Right. Right. What are your, okay, this is kind of a side tangent, but what are your thoughts on the temporal Cold War?
I kind of like it.
Me too. I sort of feel like this is something they need to come back to and like really like, maybe not give us an ending to it, but like, you know,
no,
maybe explain it a little bit more.
I don't.
Yeah, you probably can't because it's.
The problem with the temporal Cold War is that it's got the same problem from Discovery Season 2, where there was like all the red lights and who's in the Red Angel suit. There's no answer you can, like, you set that up and there's no possible answer. Nothing will make the audience happy.
Because it's all a paradox.
It's unanswerable. There's no good answer to that. The mystery itself is stupid. Don't have put that mystery into your show.
And I hear you.
The temporal Cold War is the same problem. Who is the shadowy man? It doesn't matter. There's no, you can't give a good answer to that. Like, don't have done that.
Especially
in the first
at this
place.
Point.
Right.
Yeah.
So like, I think the temporal Cold War is fine as a set of events that happened on a show, but like, don't try to specifically explain it ever, because you're just gonna make it worse.
Yeah, so, like, and I sort of feel like that's saying, the same thing with this Khan stuff, you know?
Yeah, just occasionally saying, oh yeah, there's a temporal Cold War going, and given the nature of time, there's probably multiple temporal Cold Wars going on across time simultaneously, you know?
Yeah, simultaneously.
Simultaneously, there's multiple temporal Cold Wars going on. So just the less you say about that, probably the better.
Yeah. No, fair enough. Yeah, that's a good point.
So eventually they have a fist fight. The Romulan lady keeps up with La'an way more than I was expecting. For a second, it seems like La'an almost might lose, even though she's supposed to be like a super trained person, even maybe with augment strength. I guess Romulans are just killer strong, or maybe it was also Romulan augment or something. I don't know. I think
Romulans and Vulcans are like stronger than humans on average.
They are, so. But she's an augment. She's supposed to be able to, she's supposed to be super strong, like Khan strong, right? Like she's literally a descendant of Khan, right?
I was kind of wondering about that because like, okay. So in the last episode, I mean, there's this whole storyline with Una and the fact that they believe, you know, that, well, she had to prove that she could still be in Starfleet, right? Just because she had augment, whatever.
Illyrian DNA, yes.
Yeah, so I was kind of wondering, does that not apply to La'an? Or is it that maybe...
La'an status is supposed to be... Like, La'an, according to most of Starfleet, is normal. But I think from the way that La'an spoke to Neera, the lawyer... Yeah. I think La'an knows she's an augment, but has not disclosed. That's how I interpreted the scene. I could be wrong, but my understanding was that knows she's got some sort of augmentations going on, and they just don't mention it in her family. Like, they won't mention it to the outsiders.
It also, because like genetics are weird, it could be like a recessive trait that came back up in her, you know? So like... Who knows? Maybe that'll come up later.
Yeah, like maybe she hasn't had it for a long time, but there's like radiation waves and stuff all the time in Star Trek, and it activated something, and then suddenly she's... Because she was beating the crap out of Mbenga.
That's right.
Like we saw that the same episode, that she could beat the crap out of Mbenga, and Mbenga is really
good.
We
saw him.
He can punch 20 Klingons, and he does that with like Super Soldier Serum or whatever.
It's canon.
Like, he's really good, and she's better than that. And then this Vulcan lady shows up who can beat all of them down.
Yeah, fair enough.
I don't know. I just thought maybe it should have been a little more of an even match, but that's not a huge deal. Eventually, La'an wins. She grabs the gun, and Romulans can't stand up to guns. Maybe someone should tell the Enterprise D that. And the Romulan time lady hits a mark on her neck and instantly deletes her corpse, which I thought was like pretty extreme, but also like, I don't know, don't hit that mark on accident. That seems kind of dangerous.
Yeah, it was kind of like the whole cyanide capsule thing, except it like deletes all the evidence.
Yeah, like you just turned to ash and disappeared. Yeah.
Yeah. That was kind of cool.
It was.
Yeah, I would be
cool
really worried about
effect.
Hitting that by accident.
Yeah, but don't hit that on accident. And so the La'an Khan says, "Are you here to kill me?" And La'an's like, No, I'm not here to kill you. And then she just walks off and uses the time tricorder, whatever, to go back to the present. Notably, she leaves the loaded gun on the desk next to Khan. Very poor discipline from a security officer.
She's the reason the eugenic wars happen.
She gives Khan the gun and he just goes nuts, starts killing everyone. I don't know.
I do want to talk about that scene just briefly, though.
So
I thought this whole scene was very well done because there was a lot of there's just a lot of emotion in it. You know, obviously this has to be extremely difficult for her knowing what happens after this, but also like, you know, that's her past, like that's her ancestor. So there's a lot of conflicting emotions going on, but also, yes, he grows up to be Khan, but he's not Khan yet, you know?
Yeah.
Technically, he's just a kid, and unfortunately, he's being held in this, you know, experimental whatever, you know, black ops operation. Like, it's really tragic because, like,
it doesn't seem very secretive. Like, if it
was... No, that's true, too.
It seems like this is some sort of relatively above board, like, science institute... that like they've got their name on the thing. They've got a big lobby. They're in some major building in Toronto. It's not like a secret, like remote science lab or something. It seems to be, could be part of a university or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah, it's just like, it's like that whole nature versus nurture thing. Like, I feel like, you know, it's like, who knows? Like, I don't know the full story here, but it seems like his circumstances, like he didn't really have a choice in who he became, you know? I think that's kind of what they were hinting at, you know? Because like,
so Enterprise also touched on this, but it seems like at least with the level of DNA control technology from this era and from the Enterprise era, if you are an augment, the process always goes wrong and turns you into a maniac. Like, theoretically, by like the Deep Space Nine era, there some people can do augmentation. And I guess the Illyrians can do augmentation. Like, if you have better science, you don't have to become a maniac. But Earth of this era does make you a maniac because it's a cursed technology to them.
Right. And, you know, of course, there's also like the ethical implications and like in all of that, like
sort of,
it is a tricky subject. And I can kind of see, I can kind of see why the Federation's worried about it. I think they go a little extreme, obviously. And so I think that last episode touched on that.
I mentioned this last episode with the last Too Young for This Trek episode when I was talking with my brother. There's another science fiction series called The Culture Series by a Scottish author named Ian M. Banks. And the Culture is the name of the major civilization of the Culture series. And they have so much gene modding, it's ridiculous. It would make Picard's eyes fall out. Everyone, like every single person in the Culture has a gene modded body where they can like meditate to sort of, they can like alter their own self-image, and their body will, over the next, you know, month, 3 months, however, can like reconform to that within a very wide range of human stuff. They can adjust their muscle mass. They can adjust their skin color. They can change between a male and female form. They could have an intersex form. It's just like their bodies are so fluid compared to what they can do in Star Trek. And like these people use this for peaceful expression. Peaceful self-expression is what they use it for. Even though they've got all this technology. And so I don't think that technology has to, like, having a genetic advantage doesn't have to make you prey upon the people around you. It can just like be a peaceful thing that you can do. So I think the fact that the Federation only views gene modding as a weapon for people to use against each other is, I think, short-sighted. And I think the Illyrians would agree. The Illyrians would agree with everything I just said.
Yeah, and it seems like by the time of, was it the 31st century? Whenever Discovery Season 3 and 4 take place.
Yeah.
It seems like they've kind of calmed down about that because of book species, because don't they have augmentation going on and stuff? I don't know.
I don't know. Book has super empathy, but I don't know. Maybe he's, maybe they're like just an alien that's race. Just
natural.
That's just psychic or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you look at Spock, you could, like, if someone said, hey, Spock is a human, but he had some sort of gene mod that makes him sometimes psychic and his ears look funny, then, like, I could believe that in Star Trek, you know? What's really the difference?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So then, Laan goes back to the Enterprise. If we're done about that part.
Back to her timeline.
Well, yeah, Laan goes back to the Enterprise on her timeline and bumps into the bridge, and Pike's like, oh, what's going on? But she's all dazed and goes back to her quarters.
Slightly traumatized.
Yeah, yeah. And she hands over the time rod to Yamali from the Department of Temporal Investigations, presumably the same ones that we've seen before in Deep Space Nine, but I don't think we saw them in Next Generation.
I don't think so. Yeah, I think the DS9 one was their first appearance. And I always assumed, I don't know this for sure, but I always assumed there was a Section 31 connection, but I could be way off with that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know. It could go either way. Yeah,
it's too secretive. It's too secretive. We don't know about it.
Well, I mean, presumably the Department of Temporal Investigations isn't a secret once it becomes some sort of public knowledge that time travel is a controllable technology. Like at some point in the future, they decide the public can know that time control is a technology that has been regularly harnessed. And we're going to announce that we have this Department of Temporal Investigations that's going to go through the timeline and preserve the timeline. And, you know, it's a big PR win. Look, you're protected. Yeah.
Exactly. I did think it was kind of interesting, though. I get that the temporal, they don't exist at this period.
No.
But it was a little, like, cold of them to just kind of leave her without any kind of explanation. Maybe, I mean, you know, you would think there'd be some kind of pamphlet like time travel and you. There's no kind of counseling. Like, she's just left alone to deal with this by herself. And I thought that was kind of messed up, you know?
Yeah.
And you would think that would have like ramifications on the timeline. You know, if she, you know what I mean? Like, like this kind of maybe alters her personality slightly, you know?
Oh, definitely. I don't think La'an comes away from this an unchanged person.
Right. So that was an odd choice on their part.
Well, so I feel
like... It was always meant to happen. I don't know.
Yeah. Actually, maybe it was always meant to happen. I think it's hard to understand with a time travel story or whatever. She's like, those events were never supposed to happen, and you were never meant to be aware of them. But, and actually she says, neither was your companion. They mention the word companion in a science fiction show about time travel, and you're going to tell me that this isn't a Doctor Who episode? Come on!
Well, that's good evidence for it, yeah.
Yeah. So the time agent is like, you weren't supposed to do this, but would you risk undoing all that? And that doesn't make sense as a reason why La'an can't talk about it. Yeah. I guess I get like, if people know that the temporal investigations exists before in history, they're supposed to know, then that's bad or something.
I don't know.
Like, because
it would break canon.
Like, I don't want to stop what I like. I don't want to undo what I did. I just want to be able to talk to someone about it. And the time agent's like, no, you can't even talk to anyone about it. And then what doesn't get said, because otherwise it would delete the entire point of the episode, is that like the time agent would like presumably have some sort of memory erasing device. I could imagine that that's what time agents have to fix up the timeline. And presumably she could like delete all of La'an's memories of the past 48 hours and like make
Men in Black style
suffer this. Yeah, Men in Black style. But we can't mention this, because if La'an forgets that the events happened and no one else knows that the events happened, then like this entire episode didn't happen. So La'an has to carry this weight for us, the audience. La'an is now suffering for us.
Poor La'an. I mean, she's been through so much at this point with the Gorn and like just all that baggage that comes from her ancestors.
La'an is the O'Brien of Strange New Worlds.
She is. She is one of my favorite characters so far in the show. Her
it's
and
really
Mabanga. Like, yeah, the writing on the show is freaking fantastic.
I really liked when they had the Magical Kingdom episode or whatever, where she was
like that one too.
Playing this happy princess, and like the actor was doing a completely different portrayal, but like she just did both the serious and the goofy really well. It's like really speaking to her skills.
Oh yeah. Yeah. She's awesome.
Yeah. And then we have one of the most devastating scenes in Star Trek, because La'an is alone in her quarters and she picks up a pad and calls James T. Kirk and makes up a story about why she wanted to call him. And then he's like, oh yeah, I'll talk to you sometime. And then hangs up, and then she just breaks down, and then cut to black. That's your ending.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
It's great, but it is terrible. It's powerful
and devastating.
Yes, totally agreed. Yeah, overall, I really dug this episode. This might be one of my, I think it's might be my favorite episode of this series so far.
You like this one more than
really
the last one?
It. Yeah, I do. But it's not to say that I didn't like the last one. Right, I thought that was a great episode as well. The show, this whole season so far is like really shaping up to be.
I don't know if
all the episodes are on this par, it might be one of the best seasons of Star Trek so far.
Well,
you know,
and I think that's really what's unfortunate about the direction TV has gone. Like at the end of this season, it'll be 20 episodes, which is less than one season of like an old Star Trek episode was 24 in a single season. So
true.
In two seasons of this show, we're still not getting as much of like being able to tell the story. And if they're going to tell stories this good, then I want to tell them. I want a lot of stories this good.
Right. Well, if it continues to be this good, it'll probably last for a while. But
yeah, maybe. I don't know.
It's hard to say.
Discovery
like,
Discovery's over after the fifth season. Prodigy is canceled so hard. They're not even like they have footage for season two that's not even going to get released. Like they've got done episodes of season two that they're not even going to put out. It's already off Paramount Plus.
That's really not okay.
Yeah.
See, I don't like that. Like, at least release the final episodes. You know, if they're done and everything, like, even if they're slightly unfinished, just like, you know.
And I mean, maybe you could still release them as bonuses around and put on another network or something. But it's like, it's been a heavy time for Star Trek. For a little while, it was just unlimited Star Treks, and we're going back. Like, gravity's hit us again. Yeah. We're going back into the Star Trek Dark Ages.
Well, hopefully it doesn't quite happen like that. You know, I sort of understand them canceling it because there are a lot of shows to keep up with right now, Trek wise.
Well,
I think the way they handled that wasn't well. Like, I mean, it wasn't well done.
It did poorly because it was supposed to be for children, and then they didn't put it on a children's network. They put it on Paramount Plus. And what child is going to get on their parents' Paramount Plus app? That doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, it wasn't very accessible for sure.
Like, heck, put it on YouTube. Get YouTube ad revenue from it. I don't know.
Right, I agree.
Kids watch YouTube.
It is weird that they... It's so weird that they took it off of the service. That's what I really don't like about that whole situation.
So apparently the reason is because if they take it off the service, they stop having to pay royalties and stuff. And like residuals.
Oh, that's even worse.
So like it's a financial decision to pull it back.
Yeah, I don't like that.
It's not so great.
Also, it reminds me of like the Batgirl situation over with DC.
Mm.
You know,
not familiar. Please tell.
Oh, so they finished a whole freaking movie, and they decided to not release it, for a tax break, basically. Which is, I think, terrible to everyone who worked on the movie.
Yeah.
And it also isn't a great look considering that the main lead was Latina and like all this other stuff. Like there's so many things. It's just a terrible look.
Right.
Like there's so many people that put their heart and soul into this movie. And then the fact that like it was going to be really great representation. And, you know, even if it wasn't going to be a great movie, it's still not great that they trashed it. Just to get a tax break like that. That's really shitty. And this feels like that, you know, this feels like a kind of similar situation. I hate that that's sort of becoming a trend now.
Yeah. They'll get really far into a project and then just keep it in a box.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I hate that.
It happens a lot in video games. Also projects will go.
Yeah.
On.
Yeah. Totally.
People work on it for like 5-6 years and then canceled. And everyone that worked on it can't even show, like, career-wise, they can't even show that they did something that was high quality because the game never
exactly.
comes up.
Yeah. Yeah, and they have to, like, sign in NDAs and stuff a lot of times. It's a whole thing. But, I have high hopes, though, because this show has been really good. And, I mean, hopefully it keeps going, you know?
yeah,
I
hope. So, according to...
I'm cautiously optimistic, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
There is a Star Trek Strange New World season 3 probable. It's probable in 2024. So we'll at least get a third set of 10 episodes. Probable.
And I see where you're coming from with like wanting more episodes, but at the same time, I don't necessarily mind getting less episodes a season as long as the quality is good. And I think the reason that's become a trend with shows now is because they can spread the budget a little bit more. I mean, it's not as thin, if that makes sense, not spread thin. So they can have like better effects more often and stuff like that. So I kind of get it from that angle.
Yeah. Whoa. Big fireworks going off.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
That's okay.
I don't know if it picked up on the mic or what, but
it was recording this on the 4th.
4th of July. Yeah.
Which is a big holiday here in the States for anyone outside of
here in these United States. I guess if there was like if the episode was twice as big, but the budget didn't support as many special effects, personally I think that would hopefully encourage writers to like write episodes that don't rely on heavy special effects, which is usually where Star Trek has done its best writing, is like when like you don't have all this fancy flash, and so it causes you to just focus on some characters in some funny makeup, and they go into some rooms and they say some stuff. Like,
that's a good point.
All the best episodes of Star Trek have almost always been not the big fleet battle spectacles. That feels good, but it feels like you're eating a bunch of sugar cookies. And a few
you
hours
can't
later,
have that all the time.
Yeah, a few hours later, you're like, I'm hungry again because those sugar cookies didn't actually do much for me.
Yeah, that's such a good point. It's the same thing with like practical effects. Like when you have limitations, you can actually do really good things. You know, you put more thought into it sometimes. So I agree. Yeah, that's a good point.
It would be harder. I totally admit it would be harder. I'm telling people to work harder, and that's in some sense not fair. But do we have anything else to say about this episode, or should we mention what the hook is for next episode?
Oh, what is the hook for next episode?
So, Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 2, Episode 4, Among the Lotus Eaters, says...
Ooh, that sounds like a callback.
Returning to a planet that dredges up tragic memories, Captain Pike and his landing party find themselves forgetting everything, including their own identities, as he confronts a ghost from his past.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That could be fun. Yeah.
Any sort of, like, memory manipulation stuff is almost always a win.
Like, right.
There's the one with Riker and his whole deal. You remember that one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's all very good. Star Trek tends to do a good, unreliable narrator story. So I'm expecting good things.
Definitely. And it is one of the things I really enjoy about this show is that it is going back to the episodic formula.
Yeah.
You still have like your character arcs and stuff. It's a good balance of both, I guess, is what I mean. You know, because we have like the ongoing Gorn situation and all that, but it's, you know, again, very character focused. And each episode is something different, which, you know, keeps it fresh, you know?
Well, so like I've been watching Next Generation with some friends for a while now. And when I first started watching Next Generation with them, I was like, yeah, you can watch them in any order. And they're like, what? But like, you're not going to know how the characters develop. And I'm like, they don't. This is from an era of star of show that none of you are familiar with. You literally just watch in whatever order. And like, it's going to be on reruns, but the reruns are out of order. So even like, you're never going to see it in order. You can literally just put the playlist on shuffle and hit go. That's what Star Trek should be able to do when it's good episode of Star Trek.
For sure. And DS9 was kind of like one of the first shows ever to really do more serialized storytelling.
Now, almost.
Well, not the only one, but one of the early ones.
Deep Space Nine started very episodic, and concurrent TV show Babylon 5 which was coming That's out right. at the same time, that really yeah. started where you could do serial kind sci-fi. Beat it to
the punch.
Deep Space Nine became more serial after Babylon 5 had shown yeah. that serialization can work.
That's a good point. Yeah, yeah. I hadn't thought about that.
There's a lot that Babylon 5 often gets a little bit forgotten, and I think it's unfortunate. But that's another podcast. Eric, someday you and I can do a Babylon 5 podcast. It'll be great.
Yeah, because this is actually something I don't know a lot about. I've seen bits and pieces because it was around when I was a kid, but
yeah,
because I was kind of too young for it, it didn't really resonate with me quite the same way that Trek did. I think it's got more adult subject matter, maybe, like,
well,
a little bit more political, a little bit more.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's less a little shooty, bit shooty. The acting is a little bit more closer to stage acting. People are kind of hammy and larger than life a little bit.
Sure.
And it does have a little bit of like highfalutin type themes more than like punching an alien stuff. There's certainly yeah. enough punching an alien, but that's like one sure. part out of a 45 minute episode, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And then,
it's definitely something I got to watch at one yeah. at some point.
Have
for
you
sure.
ever played
it's on the, list.
The video game Mass Effect?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
Mass Effect
I'm a fan.
Is the video game version of Babylon 5. Like,
oh,
Babylon
that's awesome.
5 turned into a space shooter RPG, but yeah. there's no major plot point in Mass Effect that didn't also exist somewhere in Babylon 5. It's remarkable how many parallels you can draw between it. I'm like, it's not usually mentioned, but I'm sure the people that made Mass Effect had to have been big Babylon 5 fans.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe one of these days we'll do Too Young for This Babylon mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. or something like that. Too Young. I've this Babylon. I don't know. You got to work the five in there some way.
two five for this Babylon.
Five, I don't know.
Five Young for This Babylon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for, joining in on this, for helping us, you know, get some content out there during our lull. And yeah, this was a lot of fun to talk about. I really enjoyed this episode.
Well, hopefully you can make it if we do this next week.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
we gotta try
to
rope MC
to schedule
at some
people
point.
In, but yeah, I'd like everyone to show up if people were available.
Yeah. We'll figure something out.
Okay. Do we have any special sign-offs?
Not that I can think of. Oh, I guess are we beaming anywhere?
I mean, I guess we're beaming to Among the Lotus Eaters.
All right. I go forget things.
whoa. All right. And start recording. I'm just going to record it in OBS. So it'll get.
Both, oh, okay.
It gets both tracks separately. And then.
Oh, nice.
If the system audio records your track well enough, then I can just use that directly.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll record mine as a backup just in case.
Yeah. Good to have a backup.
Sweet.
As they say, two is one is none.
Exactly.
No one on a Trek podcast would ever say that. Definitely not.
I don't know if we want to just jump into it or.
Do you have any particular intro you want to say or anything?
I didn't really have much planned, unfortunately.
That's okay.
I was kind of refreshing my mind on what happened in the episode.
That's actually how I used the hour between when we had spoke and then just now was
watched
the episode just this past hour.
Oh, nice. Okay, that works. So it's fresh in your head.
It's pretty fresh.
That's awesome.
I'm going to keep the episode open and kind of scrub through it as we go to help keep us in order. But yeah.
That's not a bad idea. Yeah. Because I can talk about stuff, but keeping on track or on Trek is more my difficulty sometimes. But I was going to say, I haven't had a chance to listen to the last two episodes just yet, so I don't know if there was anything discussed on there we need to revisit or anything like that.
I don't think so. I mean, we said a bunch of stuff, but we didn't get emails from listeners or anything like that, as far as I know.
Oh.
So it's not like there's much more to say on the, like, it was discussed.
Yeah, totally. Okay. Well, I guess I could try to do like a short little intro and we'll go from there.
Sure, hit it.
All right.